I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, striking is all the rage in Seattle. Even museum workers are unionizing, saying they want more autonomy on the job. Plus, the University of Washington updates its code of conduct to crack down on student civil unrest. And the Department of Justice announces several states where they say they're going to surge voter fraud investigators, including Washington State. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month. What a deal. Go to UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. All of that, and they went back to school today. All of the hand-wringing, the Seattle Education Association saying they were ready to strike. They were making signs. Around 10 to 11 p.m. last night, the school district came out and said, we're going back to school tomorrow, which I'm sure parents loved. I'm sure parents loved waiting until 11 p.m. to get the green light that they needed to get their children ready for school in the morning. So here are some details of the agreement that was reached. It says key investments include increased access to special education in neighborhood schools, expanded elementary school mental health supports, targeted professional development time, an increase in the number of school psychologists. And look, two of those things scare the hell out of me. I almost would have rather given the teachers more money. We don't need more school psychologists teaching kids that they can change their gender and all of this stuff. And the same with mental health supports. We know that that is just basically a pipeline into places like Oasis Center, Teen Child, where they're going to go disappear your children in the name of radical gender ideology. But I mean, all of this stuff and what has happened over the last week, I'm not a parent in the Seattle Public School District, but I have to imagine that this was pretty annoying considering they knew that their contract was going to expire on August 31st. The school tried to get them to start negotiations way back in March. They waited until they had maximum leverage, but kids are back in class today, so hopefully things can just continue. So it's a tentative agreement. It'll be ratified, of course, unless something falls apart. But I wonder how many parents just decided, we're not sending you to school tomorrow and we'll start on Thursday or something. Because by 11 p.m., the kids are in bed. Do they even know whether they're going to school? What's going on? It's just ridiculous. And also, I just wanted to share this because there's this talk of teachers always saying that they don't make enough money. Just so we understand the numbers. From U.S. Facts, the source of Bureau and Labor Statistics, our teachers are, when you adjust for inflation, et cetera, cost of living, our teachers are the highest paid in the nation. The only one, so the median annual salary of elementary and second school teachers, if we look at that. So preschool teachers earn the most in the District of Columbia, but Washington State leads for every single other grade. And again, there's more than 1,000 teachers in the districts whose base pay starts at $140,000 a year. So I just don't want to hear anything from them that they are underpaid. You're in a profession. The profession demands a certain amount of money. If you wanted to be rich, you should have gotten to a different profession. And as far as your profession goes, you are the highest paid in the nation. So comparatively, you really have nothing to complain about. Meanwhile, striking is all the rage right now. All the rage. Anyone who's working anywhere. Not you, Nicole. Hell no. I will union bust until the end of the time if you and Daryl and Miranda try to form a union. Absolutely not. They're even going to form a union at MOHAI. Yes, the Museum of History and Industry in Seattle. Workers have voted to join the Communications Workers of America, Local 7800. It says employees at Seattle's Museum of History and Industry announced their plans to unionize, citing low pay, understaffing, high turnover, among other issues. This has been sort of a pattern in museums across the country. Workers at the National Nordic Museum in Ballard unionized. I think it was in 2025. Seattle Art Museum employees voted to create a union back in June. So now it's MOHAI. And I just could not get enough of this quote from one of the workers in the Seattle Times. So over 70% of eligible MOHAI employees signed union authorization cards prior to the announcement. Emily Turner, who's one of them, says, quote, we want more autonomy over our working conditions in our workplaces and to do things democratically. So what you want is not to have a job For people like that, it's like, work for yourself. If you want autonomy at work, work for yourself. Be your own boss. That's really the only way you're going to get any sort of autonomy or be exceptionally skilled at your job, where your boss doesn't have to bother you very much and you de facto get a lot of autonomy. But this idea, I mean, this like, oh, we deserve autonomy, and for everything that happens in our workplace to happen democratically. But beyond all of that, we're talking about a small little museum in Seattle. How stressful can it be? And how much can you really expect to get paid? Like, to the point where you need to unionize. You're working at a museum with a beautiful setting of Lake Union. And it's like, of all the workplaces, I guess, I just don't know what their demands are going to be. And it's not a surprise, I guess, considering how ideological we know this museum to be. So it all fits into this sort of left-wing ideology. And, oh, we got to unionize. We got to unionize. I mean, we just did a story on Mohai, a couple weeks ago, where they had this exhibit. They had an exhibit that was loaned to them by the National Archives of historic American documents. And so what? Just to, like, counteract the patriotism? Outside of it, they did their own exhibit where it was, like, upside-down American flags spray-painted with BLM. And then they had this one of Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal as Captain America, which, by the way, after our report, it came down. Did you know that, Nicole? It came down after our report. We're trying to figure out exactly why. I know Mohai spoke to our friend Ari Hoffman about it. So that Pramila Jayapal picture is no longer there anymore. And then in their bookshop, all they got is just radical gender ideology, Black queer history, mutual aid for protesting and striking. So if you're surrounded by that kind of stuff every single day, I mean, what were all the stickers they had in there? Like, resistance is mandatory and stuff. Yeah, no surprise that they're going to unionize at Mohai. They're surrounded every day in the bookshop and in the actual galleries with left-wing political propaganda. So they're unionizing there. So we'll see what happens. Maybe not a bad thing if they go on strike at Mohai, if they're going to have exhibits like that, for the exhibits to be shut down to the public during that period of time. And then meantime, Seattle just cannot learn its lesson on Starbucks. So of course, Starbucks has its own, you know, little union where they were protesting. And we've seen some of the consequences for the rhetoric of elected officials on that, but it doesn't seem to be sinking in. So King County Councilwoman Teresa Mosqueda, who's a former Seattle City Councilwoman, she is joining the calls to boycott Starbucks. Imagine this. How many Starbucks are in King County? Like, how many people do they employ in the county that she's supposed to be looking out for the best interests of? And she's saying that no one should buy their coffee? She said in a statement in her newsletter, "The workers at our hometown Starbucks have been fighting for a fair contract for unionized stores across the country for years. These workers are now calling for a boycott of Starbucks as the company has refused to bargain in good faith. When we say all work has dignity, we mean all work, and Starbucks Workers United are fighting for dignity and respect for baristas that will lift up standards across the service sector, helping ensure that those who help many of us get our day started aren't left behind." And it's like, you do recall the very embarrassing moment now in hindsight where Seattle's socialist mayor called on people to boycott Starbucks.
I'm proud to say loud and clear, I am not buying Starbucks and you should not either.
Yeah, and what happened after that? Starbucks said bye and they decided to open an HQ in Tennessee. And what has the result of that been? Mass layoffs. There's layoff announcement after layoff announcement after layoff announcement. In July, we just talked about 252 layoffs. And most of those at, you know, the Starbucks HQ that they say, oh, we're just opening up a second HQ. No, you're not. You're gutting the Starbucks HQ. And why wouldn't you? The mayor of your home city is saying that you should be boycotted. And now a King County Council member is saying that people should boycott your business. And also, what happens when sales go down? What happens? You know what they're going to do? They're just going to close stores. How many headlines have we seen of Starbucks closing coffee shops all around Seattle? And it's laying off a ton of people as a result. And so it's like, look, you can, you know, push your employer for fair pay or whatever you think it is, but you push them too far and you're going to have no pay. Because you won't have a place to work. And also, I'll reiterate it a million times ad nauseum, not that I'm a mouthpiece for Starbucks, but Starbucks pays some of its baristas like $25 an hour. Starbucks gives medical benefits. Starbucks will help you pay for your furthering education so you can get a job that's not at Starbucks. And it's not enough for them. Because they're so entitled, it's this victim mentality culture. So whether they're working a cush job at a Starbucks or at a museum, or if they're the highest paid teachers in the nation, they still feel the need to unionize, to strike, and to demand more. And I hope, frankly, some of these Starbucks workers who do this lose their jobs, because a company's only going to take so much. And they have so many stores, there's so many out there, they can close a few to make a point, quite frankly. And they can pick up an entire HQ and move it across the country to make a point as well. But it doesn't stop elected leaders from just virtue signaling. Mesquite also talked about, and I didn't know this was going on, apparently hotel workers at the Embassy Suites in Pioneer Square have been on strike for like more than 2 months. It's the longest hotel strike in Washington state history. They're members of Unite Here Local 8. They went on strike during the World Cup to get wage increases, to keep up with the cost of living. Okay, guys, if the leverage you had during the World Cup wasn't enough to get Hilton to give you what you're demanding, that's probably the most leverage that you were ever going to have. And now you've been on strike for 2 months. What do you want to bet, by the way, that they're getting pay from our state's unemployment insurance benefits? Because we passed pay for striking workers. So again, of course, everybody's unionizing, everybody's striking because we come up with absolutely the most asinine policies imaginable in Washington state, worse than California, because even Governor Gavin Newsom would have been like that was passed in California, knew it would be a horrible idea, and he vetoed it. Even Gavin Newsom vetoed it. But in here, no, the unions just own the Democrats too much. All right, coming up next, the University of Washington trying to update its code of conduct to prevent some of these violent acts of civil unrest on their campus. We'll discuss. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, you're not alone. I know a lot of people moving out of state. Our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com has been talking to a lot of folks who see this quote-unquote millionaire's tax that was passed. They know it's just going to turn into an income tax on everyone, so they're looking to get out of the state.
Many people believe, as you do, as do I, that it is going to be an income tax for everyone. And believe it or not, the vast majority of the people that I work with, they're actually not going to be impacted by the millionaire's tax. But what they are impacted in is just the cost of living that we are in. And they could be people who are my generation with families. They could be people who are getting ready to retire. And they just see the writing on the wall that it is very, very expensive to live here. They see where the future is headed. And they are making the decision to eject now because this is not going to be the place for them to raise their family or the place for them to retire affordably.
Yeah, so if that sounds like you, reach out to our friend Wes Jones as early as possible, especially in this market. You want to get the process started, make sure he can give you a lay of the land for expectations with so many homes on the market right now. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, this from the UW Daily. They're panicking over there. The student activists are panicking because the University of Washington wants to crack down on violent criminal civil unrest. It says UW propels student code of conduct changes in between summer academic quarters. So the UW Daily says that there are proposals on the table right now that will broaden who can be held responsible during protests and occupations, including holding students accountable for conduct that occurred around them without direct participation and treating concealment of identity, such as masking, as an aggravating factor in sanctions. So Eva Chernofsky, who's the president of the UW chapter of the American Association of University Professors, said she has spent nearly 40 years in academia and has never seen student conduct handled this way. She said, quote, at this precise historical moment, when there is a concerted effort to impose direct ideological control on universities, why would we be making a change to our procedures, especially when it frankly seems designated to facilitate that? It's interesting that she's complaining about, I'm sure, Donald Trump and direct ideological control over universities. Yet, you know, I mean, you didn't need Donald Trump to come in and try to direct ideological control over universities because you, professors, were doing it already. You just don't like that kind of ideology. You want to push your own ideology on kids. This, of course, comes after a couple years of some pretty severe instances of civil unrest. There was, of course, you know, all the pro-Hamas stuff, fires lit on campus when they burst into a building and caused like $1 million in damage to a brand new engineering building because they wanted to in the name of Palestine or whatever. And I don't think anybody ever actually had to pay for any of the damage that was caused during that. So it sounds like, you know, and again, we're not talking criminal charges here. I think that's a separate thing. But they also had the occupation of the Quad that was very anti-Semitic, you know, were scrawling swastikas and stuff on the building. So, yeah, I mean, there need to be consequences in the student's code of conduct for doing those things. And so I'm glad the University of Washington is doing something about it. I don't want them to suppress free speech, but this isn't free speech. Rioting, vandalizing buildings, occupying a quad that's supposed to be for the enjoyment of all students, that's not free speech. So let's not pretend like it is. All right, we are what? Gosh, 2 months from the elections, roughly, and the Department of Homeland Security says it's going to surge voter fraud investigators, allegedly, into certain states, including Washington State. So this from CNN, DHS plans to launch voter fraud investigation surge on Tuesday. That was yesterday. The Department of Homeland Security planning this surge to investigate voter fraud in select states. Homeland Security Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen has accelerated efforts to make the department a central force in President Donald Trump's hunt for purported widespread election fraud. DHS has pushed states to share their voter rolls for audit and has vowed to withhold grant funding from those that refuse to adopt a broader set of election reforms. I also happen to know that there will be a mob of independent journalists doing its own voter fraud investigations between now and November. They go on to say DHS offices in 9 states are expected to take investigative action from early September to mid-October. Those states include Washington, Wisconsin, Missouri, Georgia, California, Pennsylvania, Nevada, New York, and Connecticut. Definitely not a surprise that Washington's on there, especially considering the fact that you can just attest to being a citizen and get a ballot in the mail to vote. The guidance's references to investigative steps is notable given the push comes as midterm elections get underway. Such overt investigatory actions while elections are approaching have historically been discouraged because it could influence the elections. Okay. Now, look, I don't want ICE agents or DHS agents sitting at ballot drop boxes. I don't think that's necessary or particularly helpful. But if they want to come in and lend a hand to track down actual instances of voter fraud, I don't have a problem with that. Why would anybody have a problem with that? The state always says if we find out about voter fraud, we take it very, very, very seriously. And then there's also this issue of, you know, what kind of fraud are they investigating? You know, they've threatened, the DOJ has, to actually arrest and indict state election officials who won't cooperate and turn over information, or who have policies in their state that essentially allow for illegal aliens to wind up with a ballot. Here's Harmeet Dhillon.
What do you say to those who say that this is a peripheral issue, that actually the number of people who vote incorrectly in an election or get 2 ballots or whatever, it happens, but it's not that big. It's not big enough to swing a race. What do you say to that?
Well, there's a state senator who took office in the last month who won by 6 votes. You can ask Al Gore whether he thinks that a few votes make a difference in an election. They made a big difference in his election. One vote makes a difference in an election in democracy. That's a difference. We not only have that happening in many jurisdictions, we just had the governor of New Jersey, after I sent a letter to all top election officials in the United States saying that if you are knowingly allowing non-citizens to vote in your election, you're committing a federal crime. Suddenly, New Jersey came clean and said, actually, we have thousands of people on the voter rolls who don't belong there. So this is not trivial. Okay. And it's not just the outcome and the numbers in the election. It is the deterrent effect and the drag on voter confidence. Because many Americans, if you ask them, is my vote being counted equally and only with American citizens? They'll say, I don't bother to vote.
Yeah, that's Assistant Attorney General Harmeet Dhillon. And look, that's like the excuse the left always gives for like anything. Oh, it's not happening. You give them a concrete example. Oh, it's happening, but it's very rare. And then it's like, oh, it's happening, but it's your fault. And it's happening, but it's a good thing. So it's like, yeah, I mean, we've had elections here decided by very, very small margins. And you know what? The feds wouldn't have to launch some sort of surge into voter fraud investigations if we would just do the simple common sense step of requiring voter ID. And then you could say definitively, like, no, this person, you know, is a U.S. citizen. They're eligible to vote. They got a ballot. We've checked everything. I obviously don't see the controversy in all of that. And then Democrats are floating this really bizarre story from NBC News. They're claiming they have a whistleblower, okay? I don't think it really meets the definition of whistleblower. The headline, whistleblower says USPS system Trump ordered for mail ballots is flawed and untested, okay? So I'm like, wow, this guy's got maybe some dirt, some internal memos, something like that. No, no. It's just like a guy who made a generic statement about President Trump trying to change mail-in balloting, and now they're treating him like a whistleblower. It says, an anonymous federal official warned in a whistleblower complaint this week that the technical system the U.S. Postal Service built for mail voting is flawed, untested, and likely to cause major disruptions in this fall's midterm elections if it is implemented. The technical system the USPS assembled to vet voters was developed in a, quote, rushed, chaotic, and fundamentally flawed process, according to a whistleblower complaint sent to the office of Senator Richard Blumenthal, a Democrat from Connecticut. So, you know, you have someone in the federal government. It could be literally anyone. Could be any worker. Could be USPS. Might not be USPS. Sends a whistleblower complaint because clearly they don't like Donald Trump, with very little detail about what's actually flawed about it, what's not going to work. And now they're held up as a whistleblower. I just have higher standards for what a whistleblower is. But of course, Governor Bob Ferguson using this to say, see, 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 I told you so. He says, new from a whistleblower. The Trump administration is putting together a sloppy, flawed system at the Postal Service that will disenfranchise Washingtonians who vote by mail. Washington State is defending our elections against this federal interference. Now, look, I've said, I don't want them to implement changes in a way that is too hasty. And it's not necessarily just because of the federal government. It's also because of state government. USPS, frankly, is just an outdated operation. So do I think that USPS has the ability to implement some sort of widespread changes in a span of 2 months? Absolutely not. Do I think the federal government does? Absolutely not. Do I trust state government to do it? Hell no. I don't trust any of them to do any sort of big changes rapidly in a way where I feel confident that my ballot's going to get to where it's going. The bottom line is Washington State and other states that do it are going to have mail-in voting this November. The whole system is not going to change overnight. And I'm not saying you shouldn't try to improve it, but at this late stage, I just don't agree with it. I think it is a recipe for disaster. And then if something goes wrong, they're going to blame Donald Trump. So just wait until after the November election. Do these individual fraud investigations, by all means. Surge investigators here to try to crack down on fraud because every vote counts, as Harmeet Dhillon said. But let's not upend the whole vote-by-mail system and put all these hoops and hurdles in place in just 2 months. Recipe for disaster. So I agree with Bob on that. And this anonymous whistleblower who could be a janitor at USPS. We have no idea. Nothing wrong with janitors. Just I don't think maybe clued in on the inner workings of the new plan. All right, we'll get to our segment Unbelievable coming up next. First, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington, RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. They're Washington's trusted resource empowering housing providers. They are fighting for your individual private property rights. They are helping landlords navigate all these changing rules and regulations. There's new policies that are going into effect, it seems, every single month across the state in cities and counties and at the state level, certainly during the legislative session. And they have events, political events and events on housing policy all year long. So become a member. It's about $260 a year to sign up. RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. And with that, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. All right, for the last 6 years or so, on Sound Transit and public transportation in and around Seattle, they just haven't been enforcing the fares. Because it's racist. Oh my gosh, we got a disproportionate number of Black people or homeless people who were being approached by fare enforcement for not paying their fares. So it's racist. So let's just not enforce fares. And we know what happened from there. You don't enforce fares, people aren't going to pay. And a lot of people just decided not to pay. And Sound Transit's already a budgeting disaster. They're already a disaster when it comes to revenue. And so, yeah, you don't enforce the fares, you're not going to be able to pay your bills. There's a reason why you said you're going to have to pay to ride Sound Transit. And so why not make people pay? So they are now going to implement something that has been implemented elsewhere in the country to stop people from being able to easily avoid paying fares. So they are installing fare gates on a couple stations, including Capitol Hill, in a pilot program for $87 million. So the fare gates will greet riders starting, they say, in 2029 or 2030, following a vote by the Sound Transit Board. The changes are part of an $87 million pilot program to install fare gates across 14 stations on the 1 line and the 2 line. As the Capitol Hill blog points out, it's a pretty significant philosophical shift for Sound Transit because, you know, for a long time they were worried the cost would exceed revenue of installing the fare gates. And of course, it's racist to make people pay a fare. So surely these gates are racist. And you kind of see them there. It's like you can't jump a turnstile, for instance. Like you'd really have to squeegee your way in there to be able to get past one of those fare gates. So it says there's still some unknowns. It says Capitol Hill riders must tap Orca cards and phones at designated entry and exit gates. Sound Transit giving itself a few years to sort out all the mechanics and all the details, right? So here's what caught our attention. So Sound Transit put out this fare gate assessment report where they looked at cost and benefit, essentially. So in the report summary and conclusions, they predict this. The project is financially viable with return on investment achieved in less than 3 years. Okay, $90 million for the project. They claim there will be a return on investment achieved in less than 3 years. Now, that would be not only through people actually paying their fares, but it would also be through reduced maintenance costs. For instance, you know, you get people coming in and trying to ride for free and they're vandalizing things and leaving trash everywhere because that's what people who don't pay their fares do, is they act like absolute animals. So the project financially viable with return on investment achieved in less than 3 years. Now, that's interesting because the BART system, the Bay Area Rapid Transit down in California, they installed these exact same gates, right? And I think we actually talked about it on the show because they went through a similar ideological thing like, no, we're not going to do fare enforcement. Oh, that didn't go well. We should do fare enforcement and we should install these gates. So they say that it's been paying off for them. This was an article just out today. BART's long fight against fare invasion is finally paying off. Here's how much. So it says, BART's new plexiglass fare gates generate an estimated $10 million annually for the beleaguered transit agency and have saved 961 hours in maintenance work, according to staff reports. So they say that for BART, Bay Area Rapid Transit, these new gates they installed generate money, $10 million annual that they otherwise would not have gotten, right? So $10 million, okay. So that number is interesting because I know, you know, without knowing the ridership numbers, that Sound Transit ridership, Bay Area Rapid Transit ridership, probably pretty similar. Our fare gates are going to cost $90 million. They say they can be paid off in 3 years, yet BART's fare gates are only generating them $10 million a year. The math isn't mathing. And in fact, when you look at the ridership numbers for BART. So for BART, they're about 200,000 riders on a weekday, okay? So let's compare that to Link ridership for Sound Transit. They get about 175,000 boardings on an average weekday, okay? So we actually have less than BART, less ridership by BART than BART. Not by a lot, but we definitely have less. So explain to me if BART, with a little more ridership, and they have 50 fare gates installed, we're planning to install 14. So they have way more fare gates, more riders, and they're only getting $10 million in revenue from them a year. So how are we with fewer fare gates and fewer riders going to pay off the $90 million price tag in just 3 years. That would be $30 million a year. So we're reaching out to Sound Transit to try to figure that out, but I don't believe anything Sound Transit ever says. I mean, this is clearly a stretch, but Sound Transit has never been on time and on budget for anything in their entire lives. So I think they're probably just saying this so they can do it. And then down the road, they'll be like, oh, we didn't quite pay it off as fast as we needed to. We got to get more money from people, et cetera. But the numbers don't make sense. The math isn't mathing. So we're going to reach out to Sound Transit and see if they can explain why they expect to get so much more money out of these plexiglass fare gates than the Bay Area did in theirs. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense, does it? All right, we'll get to national news coming up next. A big case targeting Kansas, but that could have implications for parents here in Washington State. First, while most investors are focused on AI, crypto, tech, the real story is happening in energy. You want to make sure that your money manager is focused on energy and its potential impact on your retirement portfolio. So I would say get a second opinion on your retirement portfolio with our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital. Zach and his team specialize in managing risk, always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So why not get that second opinion? It doesn't cost a thing to do it. Schedule your Know Your Risk portfolio review today at knowyourriskpodcast.com. Plus, unlike other wealth management firms, you can get market updates every day from Zach Abraham on his Know Your Risk podcast YouTube channel on all social media platforms. Just search knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right, a major case being brought by the Department of Justice against the Unified School District in Wedote County, Kansas. So this came out from the Department of Justice today, United States of America versus this Kansas Unified School District. They are suing to stop secret transitions, essentially. So it says that the United States of America sues Unified School District number 500, also publicly known as Kansas City, Kansas Public Schools, so one of the major school districts in Kansas, to stop it from facilitating the secret transitioning of children's gender identity at school without their parents' knowledge or consent in violation of the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act. So FERPA, they say that this is a FERPA violation and that the district maintains policies that directs staff to help students socially transition to a different gender at school and to withhold this information from parents as confidential. Gee, that sounds familiar. And again, I go into this, why would you do that? Why not us? Why Kansas? Why not come here? Not only do we have concrete examples of children being socially transitioned at school, we have children who've been missing for 6 months, missing, like on missing posters because they were socially transitioned by their school. We have an initiative right now that seeks to stop this from happening in Washington State. Man, the DOJ suing our state could help move that along exponentially. So here's what they say is happening in Kansas City. It says FERPA prohibits school districts from maintaining a policy that denies or effectively prevents a parent of a minor student from exercising the right to inspect and review the student's educational records. Okay, that sounds familiar. So if you're saying FERPA prohibits this, why is that standard policy in Washington State? Why can't parents see their kids' mental health records? Why aren't we suing over it here? So it says, unless a school district obtains prior written parental consent, they are prohibited, school districts are prohibited from requiring minor students to submit to any survey, analysis, or evaluation that reveals sensitive information concerning one or more of the following protected areas. So they say federal law says you can't give kids surveys about this, about their political affiliation, their mental or psychological problems, their sex behavior or attitudes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and religious practices. So that also is something that absolutely happens here. They do these mental health screenings. They ask kids their preferred gender pronouns, you know, their sexual orientation. The federal government says they're not supposed to be doing that. So how are they getting away with doing that? It says since at least 2017, the district has maintained a series of policies governing students who identify as transgender or gender nonconforming. The district implemented a similar policy titled USD 500 Transgender and Gender Nonconforming Students Internal Guidance. And here's what the guidance says, okay? It says, if any staff member learns a student is transgender or gender nonconforming, that information should be relayed to the school principal without delay. The school principal should discuss available accommodations and resources with the student or the student's parent or legal guardian, including the availability of a planning meeting. If it becomes known that the student does not want the student's parent or legal guardian included at this stage, that request will be evaluated on a case-by-case basis. Let me get this right, and this is the actual policy implemented in the Kansas City School District. If any staff member finds out that a kid is transgender, they are to tell the school principal without delay. So the teacher can, you know, tell this kid's secret to the principal, but they can't tell the kid's secret to the parent? Why does the principal have a right to know? If the whole idea is we're not going to out kids, right? Your policy then is to out kids to the principal. And then the principal may or may not tell the student's parent. It's this whole idea of we know how to parent your kids better than you do, and we can be trusted with such sensitive information. And also, why is it an emergency to notify a principal if a kid is transgender or gender nonconforming? Why is that something that has to be relayed to the principal without delay so they can indoctrinate them? So they can give them resources to go to gender clinics? It's just absolutely outrageous that anyone thinks that this is appropriate. All right. Colorado apparently paid queer teens to go to LGBTQ plus groups on the same indoctrination train. So this is the Colorado School of Public Health. So it has public funding and represents the University of Colorado, Colorado State University, and the University of Northern Colorado. Do No Harm, which is a conservative watchdog group, published a report titled The Colorado Gender-Affirming Pipeline. Highly recommend that you read it if you haven't read it already. So it says that these state-funded therapy programs for kids under the age of 18 recorded 469 encounters categorized as gender-affirming care. Okay. The state of Colorado spent $4.7 million on a marketing contract that included a social media influencer campaign explicitly targeting minors ages 13 to 17, with talking points emphasizing that youth ages 12 and older could access services without parental consent. So the state spent $5 million, just so we understand this, of taxpayer funds on a marketing campaign, including social media influencers, targeted at kids 13 to 17 to get them to go to this state-funded therapy program where they're doing an awful lot of gender-affirming care talk and that they can do it without any sort of parental consent. Yeah, the CU School of Public Health operated a program that pays queer youth ages 12 to 18 in rural Colorado $40 per session to participate in weekly virtual meetings. Participants are actively recruited from local LGBTQ plus events and groups that promote youth gender ideology and/or provide youth sex-rejecting transition resources. So now you've got the CU School of Public Health. They have a program called Colorado's Queer Youth Network, and they pay kids to come in for therapy sessions. They're paying gay children they find through LGBTQ groups as young as 12 years old $40 to participate in these therapy sessions. And this is like a school of public health. This is what we talk about when we talk about this, the transing of children and the pipeline. It's like as soon as there's someone in the system in a position of authority in the government who finds out this kid is gender confused, they get their claws in them, and then like this, they're going to make them certain. You're not gender confused. You're a different gender. Here's all these resources. Your parents don't have to know. We'll send you to a clinic. We'll get you an attorney. We'll pay you to come to therapy sessions. And we wonder why we have this explosion of trans kids. And again, what is the point? Why are these adults so into convincing kids that they're transgender? Is it about breaking apart the nuclear family? I mean, is it about getting these kids in the system so there's more government control? Is it about growing the size of government? Is it about making them, you know, medicalized for life? Or is it just about ideology, where you have these probably 40 to 60-year-old woke white women who are like, yeah, we're going to affirm your gender because it makes them feel good about themselves? It's just absolutely crazy. All right, we'll get to our subscriber poll coming up next about picketing. Picketing, very excited. A lot of that going on. We get a lot of emails from viewers and listeners about the First Mark Challenge. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. So many of you have taken it. Tara says, I switched my homeowners to First Mark, saved $1,600 a year, and have far better coverage, which I love hearing that. I mean, better coverage, $1,600 a year. Who could not save $1,600 a year right now? There's a million things you could use that on. So First Mark compares rates and coverage from dozens of the top rated carriers. Then they go to work to find the right coverage at the lowest possible price for your family. And when you need them, you'll talk to a real person who knows you and is there to help. That's the kind of world-class service that has kept Mike and I with First Mark year after year. We've been there with them for about 4 years now, which is, God, it's been a long time, but we just love them. They saved us $2,000 on our insurance renewal this year, so it's paid off. So if you'd like to know if you could be paying less, the first step is to take the First Mark Challenge. Go to FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. You could be the next First Mark Challenge victory. They've had over 11,000 of them. All right, I think you know my answer on this. But I was thinking about it today, like with the Starbucks baristas and Mohai and all these, like the Hilton. So I asked subscribers if you were going to go patronize a business, like you'd plan to go patronize a business, be it a coffee shop or maybe go to the museum, and there is workers striking outside, would you cross the picket line? Nicole.
You know what? I think I would cross Starbucks picket lines. Mm-hmm. But there's some that I would probably just avoid for sake of avoiding if I don't know enough on the issues.
Yeah, I guess it does depend sort of who and why, right? Who right. and why are they picketing for sure? But if it was Starbucks, hell yeah.
Yeah, I would walk by saying, this ain't North Korea.
I'm going to be like, yeah, this ain't forced labor. And then I'm going to say, anybody want a coffee? I'm buying coffees for everybody. Anybody? Yeah. Anybody at all? Yeah, if it's something like that or Mohai, give me a break. You work at a museum.
Stop.
How stressed out can you be? 90% of you say yes. Absolutely right. Nancy Campbell says, yes, it's their right to strike. It's my right to shop. Chip says, as long as the picket wasn't for some heinous act or practice, entitled people constantly playing the victim isn't one of those. Right. And that's, I'm not saying that there never in the history of time has been a legitimate reason to strike. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying the unions don't serve some sort of purpose. Right. But yeah, so many of these strikes have been about victim mentality.
Really quick, though, the Hilton strike that Mosqueda was supporting, one of the deals that they were, one of their sticking points was with Trump and informing Hilton also refused to accept a proposal that would require Hilton to notify workers if ICE or DHS agents show up on the premises.
Oh, my gosh.
That's part of their deal.
Yeah.
And go for Hilton, I'd say.
Hilton's like, nope.
Saying no to that. Good
and I'm
for you.
Sorry, if during the summer months you can live without those workers for 2 months, there's a good chance that they could live without right. the workers permanently. You know what I mean? You're kind of you're not proving the point you think you're proving.
At this point, some of the demands are just ridiculous.
So. Oh, 100%.
No.
Fishing Too Deep says, of course I would. I don't know anyone's solidarity. If your situation is that bad, find another job. I'm happy to drop off some employment applications to truly help them out. And keep in mind, remember, the rule has now changed that these striking workers do need to prove that they're out there looking for employment in order to get access to unemployment benefits. Papa Woody, almost everyone I work with has opted out of the union. If the store had what I needed, I absolutely would cross that line.
Wow. Huh. That's good to hear.
I wonder if they try to like physically stop you. No, because that would be an assault. So probably not. Yeah. And then it's a different situation with like, does a worker, a fellow worker cross the picket line? Because, oh my gosh, heaven you'd be ostracized from then until the end of time. All right. We'll get to some comments here from the live stream on the Seattle teacher strike being averted. Baron of Gray Matter says, hi.
Hi.
Mental health for the teachers or the students? You know what? Let me read that again. Yeah, it says, key investments in the decision to end the stalemate include expanded elementary school mental health supports. Yeah, for the teachers or the students.
Oh, so kids can go and tell their psychologists that they don't know what gender they are because they don't know what gender is in first grade. And yeah, they can then just slip and slide them right through and then start hiding stuff from parents.
Gosh, Rochelle Skugel, the psychologists also help with diagnosing things like dyslexia, developing plans for autism, ADHD, or diagnosing those things. You're right. I do understand that
if that's all they do,
school therapists had to have a role. But that's a good reminder, Rochelle.
It is.
They're not all in there just to indoctrinate kids in radical trans ideology. So, yes.
They help, but you could also just take them to a doctor and they could do that too.
True. Yeah.
But yes, I get it.
Yeah.
On striking is all the rage right now. I don't know. Cappuccino. Somebody. Ever watch Night at the Museum with Ben Stiller?
It can be very stressful.
It can be very stressful.
Yes, I have. That's a different kind of stress in a museum. Everything comes to life at night, yeah. Right? That's a good movie. On the King County Councilwoman supporting a Starbucks boycott, Eloise says mutiny falls flat if you try to sink the ship in the process. Right. Yes, that makes no sense. Like, don't buy Starbucks. Okay, so you think that store is going to have the money then to give you the raises that you want and the hours that you want? That makes no sense.
It doesn't. And GB Gary says, anti-business equals anti-employment.
Right. SP South, Seattle is so woke and far left at this point. They're making Starbucks look red-pilled. I think Starbucks has been red-pilled. I just wish they would come out more publicly, not in letters to the governor or anything, and say, look, Seattle's politicians have lost their minds.
Well, kind of like, I don't know if you saw it last week, Buc-ee's, the big gas stations that are in Texas and all of the South, they came out and said, we're not going to blue states anymore. So everybody wants a Buc-ee's because everybody loves Buc-ee's. But they said, yeah, we're going to stick to red states. We're not going to be expanding into blue states because you guys don't want us. Huh. You don't want business.
Yeah.
So it's true. And that's where Starbucks should be at this point.
Yeah,
they try to just stay quiet and say that it's not working.
They're kind of wusses. Amazon and Starbucks, when it comes to speaking out against policies that target them, they're a little bit wussy. On UW, floating tougher punishment for criminal unrest, Lolly says they never should have allowed that nonsense to happen on the UW campus in the first place. I agree. They let them get away with so much that was clearly criminal behavior. I don't care if you're protesting. There's conservative acts of free speech and, you know, liberal acts of free speech on campus all the time. That's not what we're talking about. It's never been what we're talking about. But yeah, lighting fires and destroying million-dollar equipment, that's a problem.
I do think it's interesting that the faculty is so upset over the fact that they might want to show
Yeah, because the faculty are the ones telling the kids to go do it, right?
That's very telling, I think. Very telling.
Quite.
Who you're hiring. And don't... I'm so scared for kids going to college.
The Trump administration's surging fraud investigators, Right Meow, says, I think they only prosecute illegal voting once in a blue moon to say it doesn't happen often. Right. They can't say, I've said this a million times in the show, Washington State cannot say definitively that illegals don't vote because they don't track votes by social security number, by immigration status. You can get a driver's license. You can use the driver's license to register to vote. You just have to do a little attestation. So they actually have no idea. And without cooperating with the federal government, we'll never know how many illegal aliens might be on our voter rolls.
Oh, I wonder if it's too many.
Yep.
Same thing. John Jacob says, if you want to know what government health care would look like, look at USPS.
Look at USPS. And look, I love my mailman. I love my mailman, but USPS isn't my first choice for like shipping something, for instance. Getting something to where it's going quickly, not my first choice. On the Sound Transit fare gates, this is the funniest comment of the day. Watermelon Shug, those fare gates will be fat phobic. Yep, pretty soon it'll be the fare gates are too thin. Fat people can't get through, but they always have like a gate where
for
you open it and
one.
It beeps. It's like beep, beep, beep. And so if you're obese, you got to go through the gate.
You know what's ridiculous is that wasn't a thing when you were doing the planning. That's what I don't like about all this, that you're adding this now. We're, 20, 30 years into this process? And I mean, if you go to Europe, everybody has fare gates. Yeah. Everybody.
Yep.
And so that's just part of putting in these trains. People don't pay unless you give them a place to pay, right? And so why we're just now saying fare gates should be a thing? What? It should have been a thing 30... Like, when Dory said this thing was corrupt, that Sound Transit was the most corrupt
Super
criminal
corrupt.
System, he was not lying.
Not at all. And Deanne has a good question. Why is it so expensive to install 14 gates? $90 million.
And you know what? I was looking up. So I would like to look more into the numbers because it actually cost $90 million also for BART to install 50 of them.
Yeah.
So that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that they were able to
all
pay
of our
off
numbers
their,
are ridiculous.
Yeah, it's like they're just making stuff up to get people to sign off on it.
Yeah, they just rate. But,
so BART, it was $90 million for 50 gates. That's, and you're saying it's $90 million for us for 14 gates?
Yes, I couldn't. That compare the numbers side by side. I mean, that's what the numbers say, but I didn't know how those numbers came about. And it's just like they throw them out there.
It's plexiglass.
It's plexiglass and some readers.
It makes no sense.
It doesn't make any sense.
On the DOJ filing suit against Kansas City for secretly transitioning kids, Baron of Gray Matter, $5 super chat, the trans industrial complex sucking the lifeblood taxes out of your community. Join today. Yes, it is a trans industrial complex. All right, right meow.
Right meow says, ugh, they need to start prosecuting adults doing these things to children. Bring consequences back.
Yeah. Chatbox says, anyone caught gender confusing a child should be put in jail. I agree. It's so weird.
It's so weird. Can we just let kids be kids? They're just so adorable and innocent and just stop it.
I agree.
Stop ruining them.
All right. On the Colorado paying queer teens to attend LGBTQ plus groups, Papa Woody said Baphomet, which I don't know what that means, but it was a super chat, so I'll read it.
Yeah.
Moon goddess. Think about this. These kids are going to be the ones running the country in a few years. God forbid. Ugh. Can you imagine? Congress will be like 90% trans.
Right.
She's like, because I mean, it's the real ideological people who run for public office.
It is.
And those are the really ideological people right now. I mean, I think there are some in the younger generation who have their heads on right and who are starting to revolt against all this insanity. But there's an awful lot of like, you know what I blame? And I've come to this conclusion for all of this. Everything. Okay. Glee.
Okay.
I blame the show Glee.
You know, a lot of characters from Glee have like gone on to tragedy.
Well, look, they normalized trans on network TV, right? They had trans characters. And then they made the choir nerds cool. And look, so they started to get like a little bit of voice and a little bit of confidence.
You messed with the natural order.
Well, you messed with the natural order of things. And they went out there and they're like, oh, now choir kids are the cool kids. And we're all, you know, super far left. Like a lot of us are gay, right? A lot LGBTQ, T, all this stuff. We run the world because we can sing or whatever it is. Glee. Glee is the root of all evil for society right now.
Yeah.
I might write a thesis paper on that.
I like it. Okay, do it.
Yeah.
I'll hold you to that.
All right. Okay. Nicole, thank you so much. We'll get to our closing sanity check. First, don't save it for a rainy day when it comes to your roof. The last time you want to be replacing or think about replacing your roof is when all the rain starts in the fall and in the winter. Do it beforehand. Our friends at Valentine Roofing right now are offering priority scheduling. So it means that if you need a new roof, you can get on their schedule and they can get out to do your project in as little as 3 weeks, which I think is pretty great. Beat the rush, so to speak. In about an hour, you'll get a fair estimate with honest upfront pricing before the seasonal demand picks up. Plus, every project includes the Valentine experience, seamless communication, meticulous cleanup, and extra mile service. I use Valentine, and thousands of homeowners across Puget Sound trust Valentine Roofing to protect what matters most. So call 206 Roofing. Don't wait for that first leak. Call 206 Roofing today. Get started within 3 weeks. 206 Roofing, make sure to tell them you heard about them right here on Undivided. All right, let's get to our closing sanity check. End the show on time today. Rarity. All right. So President Trump was with reporters in the Oval Office this morning, and he was asked about Senate Democrats blocking all of his appointments. And he says, you know what? Today's Democrats would have done the same damn thing to even George Washington.
The Democrats hold up the confirmation like crazy. I mean, you don't get one vote. We could have George Washington. See that man right up there? He was good. See the other man, Ulysses S. Grant. See the other man, Abraham Lincoln. I'd say those are three top ones. If I put them up for nomination for a fairly routine position in the military, the Democrats would not give them one vote. What do you think of that, Peter? You know it's true. Now you can also look over there, Andrew Jackson, Thomas Jefferson, Ronald Reagan, Monroe Doctrine. That's the Monroe Doctrine as opposed to the Donroe Doctrine. They get them mixed up. But I could take those three, Lincoln, Ulysses S. Grant, George Washington, And if I put them up in this modern era, they would get no Democrat support. Thank you very much, everybody.
Yeah. I mean, is he wrong? I don't think so. Literally anyone, it doesn't matter. And I love when he, you know, nominates like a black woman and all of a sudden Democrats, oh, no, can't do that. It's like, I thought you would like choose a black woman regardless of whether she was qualified for anything. But a black woman nominated by Trump? Absolutely, under no circumstances. One note, we have an interesting day tomorrow. I have some news that's going to break. I have a request I'm going to make of subscribers. So stay tuned to Patreon and Locals for that request that you're going to get. I can't say much more about it yet. I would say I'll have some news to share on that front. Don't worry, we're not going anywhere. We're not doing anything. I just got a development in a story that we've been following pretty closely. Could use your support. On Thursday in Seattle. So I will, that'll be for subscribers only. So I'll send that out to you probably before the end of the day today. So be looking for it. It's great news, really. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Finishing on time. This is a rarity. Someone mark this day in the calendar, September 2nd, 2026. I was able to finish my show on time. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. If you'd like to sign up to support the show, you can do it for just $5 a month. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show.